Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the special edition of Chatting with Sharing. Today we're going to have a very special group of people. They're the people who will be at the San Diego Comic-Con with me on a panel called How Fan Fiction Can Lead to Being a Professional. Welcome, everybody.
Hello.
Hi, hey, Sherry.
Say hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
That's good, Dustin. Okay. Please introduce yourselves and tell the audience a little bit about yourself. I'll name everybody off so everybody won't talk at once. Catherine?
Hi, I'm Catherine Figet, and I'm a screenwriter and television writer, and I've never written or read fan fiction, so I'm kind of the outsider of the group looking in.
Melissa Good?
Hi, I'm Melissa Good, and my day job is working in technology for Norwegian Cruise Lines, and I write some fanfic.
Nancy?
Hi, I'm Nancy Healy, and I've done a lot of different things, actually, everything from manage a bookstore to be a stand-up comedian, and now I am writing full-time, which started with fan fiction.
Justin?
I'm Justin Robinson. I've written a lot of books and a couple comics.
Andrew.
Hi, I'm Drew Pagliasotti. I am a novelist and a professor, and I've done some research on not necessarily fan fiction, but yaoi manga, which is sort of the graphical equivalent.
Okay. And as everybody knows, I've written fan fiction, too. Both of the people here today have written Xena. Unfortunately, Melissa won't be able to join us at Comic-Con because she's had an emergency at work, so if the audience wants to ask a question, call today, because she's here to answer your questions today. Right, Melissa?
That's true. Real life sometimes intrudes.
Yeah. We were all looking forward to seeing you. I was
actually looking forward to getting away from the constant thunderstorms of Florida, but not to be so.
Oh. Tropical storm, Melissa?
Actually, we've got one brewing off of the Cape of Africa due in next weekend. But, yeah, it's occupational hazard this time of year in this part of the U.S.
Yeah.
Actually, that's really interesting. Tropical storm, and that's your series, Tropical Storm Series.
I think probably everybody might possibly agree and say that it sometimes helps when you're writing to write what you know. And so since my books are set in the world that I live in, sometimes it's very easy to get inspiration from it.
Something you and Catherine have in common is you both wrote episodes for Xena. Catherine, how do you feel about people writing fan fiction stories based on your episode When Fates Collide?
Well, to me, it just seems like such an honor. Like, that you write anything that inspires anybody in any way is you know, such a tribute to the writer. So, yes, lovely. I wouldn't think. I mean, I don't know how you would take it negatively. I'd be surprised if someone did. It just means you've touched a chord and you did your job, that it would go forward.
I think that's cool. I'm glad that you feel that way. I don't know how all the screenwriters feel, but the ones I've met so far have all been the same. They all are happy that fan fiction writers are blessing their work. Melissa, how do you feel about it coming full circle?
Well, obviously, it would be excessively hypocritical for me to have an issue with anybody getting any inspiration out of stuff that I did. So, obviously, it's the collaborative nature of what we did and of all the people that were involved in the Xena organization has always seemed really amazing to me, and in that they were so receptive of all of the participation from the audience. Xena came to be right when the internet was just coming into where people were able to present material freely on the open web. So it was kind of like a gentle storm of where people came on to be able to put their stuff on the web. Because before, when you wrote fanfic, and if there's any older fanfic writers, you'll know this, the only audience you really got was from zines, which were printed. And you would go mm-hmm. to science fiction conventions or you know, Comic-Con or Dragon Con, and you'd go into the dealer's room and you'd see these big old boxes, right? And the big old boxes would be full of zines. And that was my first exposure to fan fiction. Right. But I always think that it's really a tribute to the creator when someone gets inspiration from their work and tries to build on that work, because it means that you really have ignited something in their imagination.
Has everybody on the panel read any fan fiction? I know Catherine hasn't, but Justin, have you read any fan fiction?
Well, I tend to regard all of comics as fan fiction, so I'm going to go with yes. I mean, anyone who's read any Alan Moore, especially.
That's true. You could consider that, yeah, Lost Girls or something.
Yeah, Lost Girls or League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I mean, even Watchmen is actually based on a bunch of other properties.
Yeah.
It's actually a very old form. My dad in the 1940s wrote fan fiction on old movies, and they used to write a newsletter and send it to other fan fiction friends by mail before the mm-hmm. booklets. So it goes way back.
Sure.
Drew, as an educator, have you read fan fiction? I know you do talk about fandom, but have you read any?
Oh, yeah, of course I have, starting with Star Trek, of course.
Yay!
I have some friends who write some great fan fiction, too.
I'm one of those people. I wrote Star Trek fan fiction in zine form.
Wow.
Back in the college, instead of studying.
I'm a big fan of Holmes Watson, too.
That was actually the first place I was introduced to the concept of Slash, KS Slash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me too. For those people who don't know what Slash is, that means male and male or female and female. And KS is Kirk and Spock. I just want to clarify because not everybody knows that.
Oh, I didn't know, so I appreciate that.
Don't feel bad. I write fan fiction that I didn't know, so it's okay.
May I just interject one thing? The reason I haven't not read it out of I don't want to read it. At the time when it was coming out, I've been very protective over reading anyone's material that would be something I would then write or be still writing in because of all the lawsuits and craziness that comes on of you stole my idea. Many people apparently wrote Valentine's Day before I did. I think there were 19 lawsuits against me when that movie came out. So I'm just cautious of that.
Wow.
There's entire divisions in studios that handle just the lawsuits against the writer saying you stole my idea, that's their only job. So it's a big issue. But second, I have seen the videos that people make. They'll take images from an episode and put it to a song, and those I find just gorgeous and lovely, and they really mean a lot to me. So I've seen those. I'm just leery of reading something.
Yeah, at conventions, fans will take a series of scenes and they put it to a popular song, whatever the theme is, and they make these really gorgeous videos.
Those are some super talented people.
Very, very. And it's amazing to see the cuts and the way they work it. It's almost like fan fiction, so Catherine, you're not far off.
Well, the song choices often, you know, definitely heighten things or make, you know, moments even bigger than they were in the episode, and the way they put them together, as we know editing does in general. You can take one scene and put 9 different songs to it, and it all has a different feel. Mm-hmm. So, but it's that.
But the thing is that both Catherine and Melissa's episodes are extremely popular. So I know there's, and it's kind of funny with Melissa because she's a fan fiction writer as well, but I know that other people have written fan fiction based on your two episodes. Is that weird to you?
No, it's not really weird to me, because I think it's a very difficult question. I think now that we're in an age where anybody can pretty much put something up for people to be able to see, and your audience stretches from, instead of hundreds of people, to millions of people, it becomes a very strange question when it comes to intellectual property rights. I can appreciate how conflicted Catherine must feel sometimes with all of this, because a lot of us that do fanfic, we feel very free to do and see and write and put up on the internet and do whatever we want. But there are a lot of people that probably don't appreciate that. I know there have been some fandoms where fanfiction was not appreciated. I know some authors who do not appreciate people taking their creation and making offshoots of it at all. So it's not always a happy place situation when you're talking about people's something that they hold very dear to them, which is characters and stories that you create. I mean, that's about the most personal sharing you can possibly do.
Mm-hmm. True. Right.
And now that we've got cases of people who are making money off of cleaned up fan fiction, it becomes even more difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, what was it called? I can't remember the name of the movie in the book because I don't really, I've never read it, and it's not really my cup of tea. Oh, 50 Shades of Grey. I know there was like 1,000 lawsuits for that one because it was based on Twilight.
Right.
I mean, it's just, it's all, because everything is coming together, it's a very difficult period. How do you feel about, well, we're talking about that, but how do you feel about all of the comics and fan fiction stories? Justin, you can really talk about the comics as you're the expert here, on movies. Well, you're the expert on comics.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, no, I'm in favor of comic book movies.
There is a certain
sort of fan fiction equality to pretty much any of the ones you're gonna come across. I mean, you look at Batman Begins is a good example, because it's based in a large part on a graphic novel called The Long Halloween, but it's not really a direct adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. That's the example that comes right off my head. Another one would be. The Iron Man movies. In the original Iron Man, he was a World War II vet, possibly Vietnam. I don't remember offhand. But then in the movies, he's in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this updating of the stories for a modern audience.
True.
Which, I don't know, is a good thing. I think it's a good thing.
And you love it anyway, so.
Oh well, yeah. No, I don't know anyone who doesn't like Iron Man.
Yeah. That's true. Very true. And Drew, you are the resident professor, so I need to ask you this. How do you feel about fan fiction, considering, you know, it's creeping onto the world of literature? It pretty much almost is literature. Do you like that concept?
Well, I do think the fan fiction falls within, you know, the definition of literature. You're telling a story. Of course it does, right? And
uh-huh.
I don't think there's anything terribly new about fan fiction because, you know, think about the Greek myths being retold over and over and people adding to them and that sort of thing, kind of early participatory storytelling. And then, Sherlock Holmes had all sorts of fan fiction in the late 19th, earliest 20th century being written about it. Yeah, so, and I think Alice in Wonderland had some fan fiction written about it. So, I mean, yeah, it's been around. I think what we're doing is I think the difference now is the copyright wasn't an
mm-hmm.
issue for Homer, right? You know, but now that we copyright intellectual property, then all of a sudden fan fiction starts to become an encroachment on someone's personal territory. And that's where the controversy comes in.
That's true. They didn't have copyright. Go ahead.
The other thing that just occurred to me, because I heard somebody talking about it on a podcast earlier today, was the whole self-publishing genre that started, and Amazon's new program of being able to pay a monthly fee and read as much of the books that they have as they want. How does everybody feel about that?
Well, I can speak to that because I'm an Amazon self-published author. I have a lot of mixed feelings about it, to be honest with you. But it certainly affects me financially. You have to agree to be put into that program. There's 600,000 titles. So it's a personal preference, I guess, what you want to get out of your publishing. For me, it gives my books more exposure as an independent author. I still make money, even if they borrow them. So I'm okay with it for now. As a consumer, I like it because there's a lot of books that I read so many different types of things. I love nonfiction. I love political thrillers. And there's a lot of books that I would love to read, but they're not way up there on my list, you know what I mean? And if they're on this, then I'll download and read them. I find it interesting because Amazon actually came out with something, if people remember last year, talking about looking to market fan fiction on Amazon.
Right.
For certain shows and actually charging a fee for certain fan fictions. And, I'm not really sure how that would be. You start talking about intellectual properties. I worked in a college bookstore for a lot of years, and intellectual property law was a huge problem. And Drew is a professor, just with professors actually taking license with copyright and making things for their students.
I believe fifth.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so many layers to that. But I don't know. I think the Kindle Unlimited thing, we'll see how it goes. As a published author,
Nancy,
it can be a little weird.
Nancy, you brought up a really good point about how that is encroaching. The fan fiction is being paid, but fan fiction is being based on other stories. How do people, Melissa and Catherine, when you guys are doing, Catherine's doing movies, Melissa did TV shows, how do you feel about that? Amazon is going to pay authors to write fan fiction based on your stuff.
Well, they can't, though. I mean, if I can interject, they have to. Whoever has the rights to those intellectual properties, they have to agree, and they'll get a cut of that. So you're not going to have every show. It's not like you're necessarily going to have Xena be a fandom that you can write for. I think they announced, when they put it out, I think they announced like five or six different agreements they had so-called come to. They haven't done anything more about it.
But how is
they
that?
Can't do
is
something
that really
like
different?
Catherine's. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, that sort of reminds me of what they did with the Star Trek books. There's a lot of Star Trek books that were published out there that are sort of fan fiction that were brought into the Star Trek official fold by the right holders of that property.
Yeah.
I would just say, in general, this is kind of a higher question for legal and lawyers, because there's always a creative rights, separated rights issue on anything surrounding this. So I feel reluctant to sort of answer what you should or should not do, but people will let you know what you can and cannot do pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Look at it that way.
That's true.
Well, the Sherlock Holmes stuff, they just ruled that that's in the public domain. So I'm not quite sure if that means that people can write Sherlock Holmes fan fiction, if that's going to affect like the BBC series, are they going to have any grounds for objecting to that?
Is that because it's over 100 years old?
Yeah, it was just a court case that came out, a week or two ago or something, maybe?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's in public domain then, but then if somebody picks it up and makes it into a marketable property again, what does that do with it? Where do you go with that?
That's interesting. That's really interesting.
No easy,
I never
no easy
thought
answer.
About that with Sherlock Holmes.
I mean, there's a lot of them, Sherlock Holmes. There's all of Edgar Rice Burroughs' work. There's, Tarzan and John Carter of Mars. But if somebody else has picked that up and made that into a movie or made that into a property, where does the rights lay there at that point? Do they, what, where, it's, I don't know.
Okay. We need a lawyer on the panel. Quick, find one.
Yeah, they'll all be decided once real money gets involved. It's one thing.
Right.
Even your own history of fan fiction that you just relayed, where it started out as people printing it maybe and Xeroxing it and giving it to each other and just wanting to share their version of something, to now where it's making real money, that's when everything will kind of shake out with law, with legal.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. How everything steps on everything else. It's just interesting. I didn't know that Edgar Rice Burroughs had become open too, like Sherlock Holmes. When did that happen? The same time?
Yeah, I think the copyright terms for novels is, I think, author's life plus 50 or something. I don't really honestly know the exact terms of it, but I know that it and quite a lot of things that that come out as movies now are in the public domain.
Because Jane Austen was very popular for a while.
Oh my gosh,
and, I mean, for a while they did every book. And so they got that down, nailed down now, or how it works, because, you know, all these different companies was doing Jane Austen.
Don't know, but
it's funny that no one talks about Jane Austen fandom.
Everything changes.
That's true.
But there's a good example of going pro, right? If you're writing Jane Austen novels, and those get published professionally.
Yep.
Yeah.
But they're technically fan fiction. So.
Well,
yep, they
fan fiction is the definition of fan fiction that a fan who is not pro wrote it, or is it simply that they're taking characters already created on a show and spinning off on their own? I mean, what's the actual definition of fan fiction?
That's a good question. I don't know if amateur's necessarily
Nancy
part of it.
Nancy Holder actually was addressing that when I interviewed her, because she's part of the panel too, but she's teaching today. And she said that she actually does stories based on Buffy, but the franchise directs it. So it's a different terminology than fan fiction, than writing like a fan fiction story, say based that's on the net that people can look at for free.
Right, just like when you had Xena comics or you had Buffy comics.
Right.
So
that
is got a rights holder to it. I would say real fan fiction, like the definition would be fans who are not being paid.
Exactly.
To write stories based on characters that someone else created. That would be my, if I were to define it, that's what I would say.
I agree with that.
Well, then when you get into, I don't know, maybe it's not fan fiction, if you get into the Holmes or the Austen stuff, I mean, there's nobody dictating that, but fans are making money using someone else's characters.
Yeah, but she doesn't have any family left, and it's been like 300 years.
I don't know.
So I don't know how that works. I mean, like, you couldn't do that with Agatha Christie because she still has descendants, you know. You know what I'm saying? So I don't really know how that works because of descendants and stuff. It's in the public domain, but if there's nobody to get the money, who's the copyright for?
Well, I think Catherine's right. I think it's not going to be a huge issue for most people until there's real money involved and there has to be somebody that's concerned about the money involved. And, you know, that's what it comes down to. The Internet, I think, is, you know, largely the media age is what's changing all of this. And Melissa kind of alluded to that with Xena coming out, you know, and being in that period of time where the Internet was really emerging. Now we have it's changed the entire entertainment industry, and fan fiction is feeding into that in a different way, maybe. You know, you don't just have ABC, NBC, and CBS, and Warner Brothers, and Paramount, and Columbia. You know, you have Hulu, and you have Netflix, and you have YouTube, and you have paid programming, and you have, you know, there's all kinds of venues out there, which increases all of this, because the market is so large. So once somebody can test something, that's when you're going to have an issue. You talk about Xena fan fiction, like both Melissa and I, what we've published started in the fanfiction realm is what they call Ubers, right?
Exactly.
Which are not
me
Dean and Gabrielle.
Don't forget
but,
me.
Yeah, well, it's okay, but you know what I'm saying. They started as Ubers.
That's
so
exactly right.
So they're original characters, but they're based on the personas to a degree of Dean and Gabrielle, and the concept the show puts forth that they will come around to each other again life after life after life.
Yep, that's
so,
exactly true.
But
you
that
know,
could have, it, see, this is what I would argue, is that could exist without Xena. You could
well,
still
could,
have
right.
two characters that meet each other life after life after life,
oh,
and never, Xena never
right.
had to exist for that. But
and
I wanted
exactly.
to ask a question. I have never read a 50 Shades of Grey book. It's just, I have enough problem focusing on my own sex life, which is non-existent, to read about somebody else's. I'm like, I have enough energy to try to get one, as it is. So I have not read them, but I had not heard until you just said that they're based on Twilight. But they're not
mm-hmm.
the Twilight characters, so
no.
so they could have existed on their own as well. So that feels a little, I mean, I'm not even sure how that works, because they're not the two characters in Twilight, right? Not one
yeah.
isn't a vampire
no.
and one's a girl.
No, it was a Uber based on the
right.
Twilight series, but so she spinned it, so it wouldn't be any kind of copyright issues. That's what I understand when she was being interviewed.
So that's
well,
the difference
I mean,
of what we're talking about is the people who write a show that's directly with the characters
right.
and taking
right.
them on a different journey than was seen week to week versus somebody
right,
who does
fantasy.
The Twilight version where they're in the 50 Shades where they're actually just spinning off and letting perhaps the Twilight fans know but still maintaining their own story.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Not to get off the fascinating issue of copyright, but we're at the half-hour mark. So I wanted to bring up a little bit about Comic-Con. Are you guys really excited about doing Comic-Con? How do you feel about it?
Well,
this
I'm
my
excited.
First.
I've
Anybody?
Never been to Comic-Con.
Oh,
me
goodness.
Too.
I'm another newbie.
I'm going to walk around like in Rocky Horror with a I'm a Virgin shirt on and have as everyone tell me what I'm supposed to do and point me.
Well, Catherine,
oh,
you make me
made.
Feel better because I have no clue. I've never been. So it will be interesting. And, you know, one of my friends who's coming as my guest is going to wear a costume.
Huh?
Am I going to wear a costume? And the answer
no.
to that, so that you all know, is absolutely positively never going to happen. But
yeah, me too.
Okay. So
but,
I actually didn't get to go to Comic Con, which I'm devastated about, but I have been at Dragon Con, which is its East Coast cousin. My advice to all of you is drink lots of water and bring a camera.
Yeah. A lot of water and bring a camera, I agree. Especially, that's what I keep getting told over and over again. I mean, because I mentioned it on a couple of my blog and a couple other places that I've never been. And I've been told about 50 times, bring water. Don't they have, like water fountains at the convention center?
Yeah,
yeah,
but there's, like, 130,000 people.
Yeah, I mean, you want to drink a lot of water and make sure you stay hydrated so that you don't pick, you try not to pick up the con crud, because otherwise you will spend a week after you leave the con wishing you'd never gone.
Hmm. Well, I've been to Dragon Con with Missy,
yes.
but I have not been to Comic Con, and I asked Adrienne Wilkinson, because she had just done it last year, and she said you have to wear comfortable shoes.
That's
and
also true.
I, who am 5'1", tend to like to wear heels, so I'm at least 5'2", and 5'2 and a half. And she said, I don't care what kind of heel, you're going to want tennis shoes because of all the walking. So all I know is
yep.
is comfortable
we're
shoes.
We're sneakers.
Mm-hmm.
She's absolutely correct about that, too.
Yeah, I can verify that. And, you know, those Dr. Scholl's insoles are a good idea, too. I mean, I've been going to Comic-Con every year for the last 12 years. So...
Justin
yeah.
is a veteran.
Water and shoes are good ideas. Yeah.
Justin, are you dressing up?
No. I just look ridiculous. If I wait for you to dress up, I mean.
Yeah, but that's the appeal of it.
Yeah, no, I don't know. My wife might. That's a big might. She's thinking about it.
When I ask, I'll throw out a question to all you who have gone there. I had one friend who is a regular saying he likes it less and less because it used to be a gathering for true geeks, self-professed geeks and comic fans and people who found their like-minded people. And now that it's gotten so broad and big, it's become too celebrity, cool kid driven, and they've kind of lost their home.
That's kind of true, but for me, it's I get to hang out with all my friends in the gas line for a week.
Hmm.
I think that's probably true. I think that's also what they found has happened to what's the one that's in?
Oh, Dragon's Lair
South by Southwest.
Hmm.
South by Southwest, and it has just become such a big deal to be there. Because I can remember being at Dragon Con when they were able to have it in one hotel. And just being at a science fiction convention and walking in and having the entire lobby filled with stormtroopers, it's kind of a life changing thing where everybody would bring their own costumes and they'd load in and everybody would have little carts that they would bring in with their little cases of soda and everything that they're bringing in. It used to be a very personal experience when we went to Dragon Con, and now it's a zoo. And I think that San Diego Comic Con is probably the same kind of view that people are just there to be there, as opposed to there because they truly love the media.
Well, that's kind of sad. That really is. I've been going to conventions since I was a kid with my dad, and I've never heard of a convention before that had a red carpet before Comic Con. That to me is really bizarre.
Well.
Does anybody else that's been to a convention, how do you guys feel about it?
It's weird.
I'm just happy when I get coffee. I go to the Xena convention, and someone always magically has a Starbucks coffee for me, and that's the red carpet to me. I'm like, I don't know who you. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, XenaCon would never have a red carpet because they're very down to earth, and they're really, you know, everybody's so nice and normal and everything. Well, as normal as geeks can be. But I've been to science fiction conventions at the convention center with the 12th anniversary for Star Trek, and they didn't have a red carpet. I just think it's weird.
No, that's where it comes into the whole point of it becoming now a media event as opposed to a convention.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just hope people are in costume, and I'm going to say that 3 or 4 times if I can, because that means so much to me. When you go out of your way, I'm so grateful that people spend the time, because it is so lovely. It's like Halloween. It's like when you go to a Halloween event and no one's in their costume, and you're like, oh, I'm too good for that. I'm like, well, what's the point of the party or Halloween? You're not going to wear your costume.
You're going to love it, then.
Was I with you when this happened, Missy? I was in an elevator at Dragon Con. That was my first event, anything like that. And I was there on the Xena panel, and I was so wide-eyed the entire time. And it was about 3 in the morning, and I was dancing with rave sticks at a rave with stormtroopers. And I looked around, and I said, I'll never forget this moment. I'll never forget dancing with all of you, waving my little glow stick. And then I think it was with Missy. We got in an elevator, and there was two people there. And I said something about pushing a button, and they wouldn't move or do anything. And they did just like they didn't hear me. And I said, what? I go, can you push 3? And nothing. And finally, I think it was you, Missy, turned to me. They're vampires. They can't see you. They're invisible. So you can't talk to them. And I'm like, what? Like, that was just like the mind-altering moments of that you can't see them.
Because those people not only do cosplay, but they actually are reenactors. So they're not there dressed up just for the fun of it. They're there to become that, whatever it is that they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's like taking your head out of normal space and putting it into Dragon Con space or con space, and you can leave your life behind and just become another person for a couple of days.
But that's so beautiful.
That's very appealing. Yeah, it's hugely appealing, yes.
Every year, my daughter is 7 now, and since she's in preschool, at two. It says, in the last 5 years, I've dressed up as Maleficent for Halloween, and I come in full costume with green makeup, full, you know, purple eyeshadow, false eyelashes. I'm done to the hilt and platforms, and I carry my big stick, you know, with my raven, and now all of a sudden it's a movie. So that threw me, but it was my character since childhood. And every time I would show up and kids would part, naturally just back up. And if I could make one cry, that was, you know, bonus, crying child. And then one parent walked up and said, "Who are you?" And I would not break character. I wouldn't for the entire time. And then I led the parade, the costume parade. And finally this other parent came and said, "I don't know who you are, but I really do admire your dedication." And my very best friends there, I wouldn't say a word to them who knew it was me. I refused to break character. And I had this whole voice. It was, when you're in it, you're going to stay in it till it's over.
Yep.
And that's the best.
Yep.
That is so cool.
Well,
Catherine, you know that your moment was actually – oh, I'm sorry. Catherine, no. You know your moment on the elevator was actually in a movie. In Jane Austen Book Club, they had that exact same thing. She came in. She had no idea what was going on in the hotel. She asked them to push the button, and they just sat there and looked, and he stood there looking at her. It was exactly the way you described it.
Well, I haven't seen that movie, but wasn't it you, Missy? Because Missy really took me under her wing and said, "Oh, well, they're invisible. You're just going to have to push that button yourself."
Catherine, I was hit by lightning twice. And I have no filter memory, so you could have told me that I picked up that elevator with you in it and slapped my arms and you flew to the moon, and I'd have to believe you.
I pretty much, because you were the one that kind of walked me around and said, you know, that's, she would tell me who every character was and what was happening. And I said, there's a bar, right? There's a bar. Because if I have a bar, this is going to all make even more fun. So she took me to the bar.
Yeah. Delacorn always says bars.
Okay. Makes sense. But I just, when you were saying that, I started like, oh, my God, that's right out of the movie.
Well, you know, it actually fan fic allows us to do this, and conventions allow us just to leave just, you know, your normal, ordinary life behind. And DragonCon, I know that it's always pretty funny, because that's a big convention area down at Peachtree, and they always have back-to-back conventions, especially on that time of the year. And I can remember times when DragonCon was sharing space with the people that the Salvation Army. And then you'd have a convention, and I'd come in early to start the Zuma trap up, and you'd just see the expressions on these people's faces, these completely normal people's face. When the DragonCon people started coming in, you know, with everyone's got stormtrooper helmets, and, you know, they're walking around. The only red carpet they have really is there's somebody walking around with a Wookiee, and, you know, everyone's coming in with 6-foot-tall weapons and leather and everything else, and
I just like to set up a camera at all the TSA checkpoints on airports and see these people go through with their luggage and just watch what happens.
I remember somebody trying to get a butt lock, which is the Klingon hand weapon, through there once. That was pretty entertaining.
I bet. I saw a special on cosplay on PBS, and they were talking about that, and they said they have special paperwork for their swords and all that stuff, but it still sends everybody into a panic when they see it.
Although I have to tell you, I'm guessing that the Atlanta airport is used to it by now, because DragonCon's been on every year for like 20 years, so I'm thinking that they probably are used to it by now.
We actually have a question, it looks like. Hold on just a second. Hello, caller, you're on the air. May I have your name and may I have your question?
Hi, my name is Rana. I have a question about, for Comic-Con. How do the fan fiction writers feel about having actual fans?
Oh, that's weird. It is weird.
I would say, the first time I wrote a fan fiction was last year. It was the first time I ever wrote a fan fiction. And I had no idea. My son suggested that I do it to get back to creative writing, and I posted it, and the only thing I even knew existed was fanfiction.net through him. And then I started getting people reading it, and I started joining some Xena groups because that's what I wrote, and I was blown away by the emails and the Facebook messages and the friend requests, and it was insane. Like, I had no, I was not prepared for that at all. I thought it, it's very cool. I mean, I love to hear from people who read things I write. I love to hear from people and talk to them about anything I write, but it was very surreal for me. Anyway, because I didn't expect that.
The first time I was asked, I was stunned. I was like, really? Because it was at a Xena convention, and there were much bigger people there, much bigger fanfic writers than me there. And she goes, oh, yeah, absolutely, please sign it. And I, it's an ego boost, to be honest.
Well, I think I didn't write fan fiction, but I think for me, you have so few fans as a writer anyway that it's always just really touching because I think people in general forget there's a writer in TV and film. They just it's very actor centric. It's very on camera centric. So you always I'm always just surprised when anyone knows I wrote anything.
And I think Steve Sears has said the same thing. It's just that the reaction he gets from the Xena fans, which for whatever reason,
Xena really was the major fandom that I've been involved with. And there seems to be a very writer-centric, creator-centric vibe in the Xena audience. And they respond to the writers and they respond to the people who make the videos. And that seems to be, they seem to have a very much closer relationship or at least an awareness of the creative staff than I think some others do. So they've always been very responsive to fanfic writers in that particular fandom. It's, maybe it's because of this huge convention where everybody can get together and, you know, you actually get to meet people and you have that moment. You have that moment when you actually go to a, what I told somebody once was is that I remember going to my first science fiction convention when I was, I don't know, probably in grade school. And it was a revelation to me because I had thought all along that I was a complete weird freak because I liked things like Star Trek and, you know, I would take apart telephones and I was technically oriented. And obviously there was something terribly wrong with me. And then I went to my first science fiction convention and found out, no, I'm just normal. Like everybody else here at this convention who has, you know, bear heads on their heads and they're, you know, wearing duct tape and have... And so Xena, that Xena kind of did that for gay women, you know, because I think a lot of people sort of toiled in obscurity before then, and they were very siloed, very isolated. And then you come to your first Xena convention, it's just like, oh.
Melissa, when I first met you, was at my first Xena convention, and I went over and I said, could you please sign my book? And he said, sure. And we spent 10 minutes talking. I didn't expect that.
I love talking about writing, and I love talking about the characters, and I fell in love with those characters. Obviously, I did, I wouldn't write as much of them as I have. But the ability to actually meet people who have the same interests as you is precious. And if you do something and it's appreciated by other people, and then, you know, they come up and they tell you that, that's triply precious. So every time you get somebody who's a fan of your work, you can only have one, okay, that's an amazing thing, and you should cherish it.
Yeah, it is.
Yep.
Very. Catherine, I got to tell you, when I went up to you at the first Xena convention, I was scared to ask you for my autograph because I was so impressed by you.
Well, okay. my reaction to that is it's just so unusual for writers that I think that in these venues, like you're saying, I think it's important for everyone there to realize we don't feel that divide because our job is sitting at home, you know, on a computer writing. Novelists, because it's their name on the novel, I think it's closer. Like you can go to Stephen King and, you know, or J.K. Rowling and, you know, you have a closer relationship with them. And I think, obviously, for fan fiction probably, cause it's their name. I said, but in film and television, it's just not the same. You know, it's definitely the focus is on the on-air talent and the director next and then the writer. Like most people won't couldn't tell you who creates a lot of shows, but especially mainstream shows. But what I had found with Xena, it was as it was previously stated, one of the first times I experienced someone understanding that I wrote that episode. And that, and it's not even an ego boost as much as it's almost like a disconnect where you want to say often or sometimes, I should clarify that, but the actor doesn't necessarily believe in or feel the feelings that you're identifying with or the emotion that you're tracking, that you're drawn to.
Right.
They're hired to perform the job. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. It's a bonus when they do invest themselves. But the emotion you're reacting to is usually from the writer. That's true, kind of, that disconnect happens by the time you get to them that you don't realize they're probably more like-minded with you than the people that your focus is on.
Absolutely true.
Well, you put us at ease. I mean, like I said, it was the first time I ever saw you. I mean, later on I talked to you and I was much more calm, but the first time was right after you wrote the episode. You were really wonderful putting everybody at their ease. You were great.
Oh, I don't know. The last time I saw Catherine in Seattle, she was beating the crap out of me, so I don't know.
Oh, she's beating you? Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I just hope I reiterate that again, is please don't put me and most people I know who are in the same job I am, don't put us in that position, in that power position. No one wants that. We want to be equals with you because we've extended our hands and saying, this is what I feel. These are my dreams, my thoughts, my emotions. Do you understand them? You know, most writers, we look deeply into life to be either understood by someone else and find a like-mindedness or to be understood ourselves. So we've extended our hand, and if you come up and take it and meet us halfway, then we know we've made the connection that we're seeking. So it's not, I don't know any writers that want to be on a pedestal or be thought of as something other than I put myself out there and I'm vulnerable and wow, I'm so glad to meet you and that you saw into me.
I think that's true of a lot of creators in general. I think there are creators, and certainly there are people who want to just be in the public eye, but I think there are a lot of creators in the arts who, there's a difference, right, between people who create because it's what they love, and they love creating these characters, whether they're acting or whether they're directing or whether they're writing them. And, you know, different people, certainly if you're really in the public eye, you have to be careful, but my experience has been working with different people in a lot of event settings and meeting people that way, that most people are just, I mean, people are just people. And if you appreciate what they made and, you know, you admire what they made and you respect what they made, that means something to them. And, I mean, I think for most people, and I don't think it is flattering to be put on a pedestal any more than it is to be hammered, because nobody can live up to a pedestal. And, you know, nobody really deserves to be hammered. Some people like Coke and some people like Pepsi. Some people love Xena and some people didn't get it, you know. But
exactly.
It's valid because lots of people love it. And that's how I feel about it. Some people like what I write. Some people don't. But I don't want anybody to be like, whoop, whoop, here, you know, it's just me. And if somebody loves what I wrote, for me, that's just, I'm just blown away. Anytime anybody says something to me about a character I created, I just don't even sometimes know what to do with that because I don't expect it, you know. But that's me.
Yeah, I think that's a great distinction now that you said that, because every actor I know, they've also made themselves vulnerable, ripped themselves open to portray something. So I think I don't mean to sound like they don't appreciate that. They're hoping you recognize their work and what they put out there and the rawness and emotion that they've brought forth. I think where the divide or disconnect is that doesn't necessarily, unless they wrote it themselves, the writer, director, mean that they believe in the material they wrote. They found a way. I think that's where the disconnect happens. And the best example I have is I have close friends with Gillian Anderson, and she would say that, like, people will come up to her and speak to her as if she believes as Scully believes. Right. And then they would talk to her on that platform from that point of view. And she'd say, actually, no, I'm much more Mulder's role in real life. Mm-hmm. I believe in much more everything he believes, so can we talk over here? And not realizing that she's doing a great job as her character. That doesn't mean she wrote that episode, believes those themes, or believe what that person is coming
right.
to her for. Do you see what
right.
the distinction?
Yeah, no, yeah. I totally yeah. agree with that. I totally agree with that. It's totally, when you're writing, you really have to, even if you're writing a plot that's maybe out there, you really have to identify with the emotions that you're writing in that character at that moment. And it's very truthful. And not that I'm saying it's not truthful for the actor, but also the writer is unseen. You're right, particularly in film and television. I agree with that. And in theater. And with the actor, people sometimes really do, because they see them in these iconic roles, they forget that they're not Scully. They're not Gabrielle, you know? They're who they are as people. And it's harder for people to make that distinction, I think, with actors a lot of times.
Right. Yeah, I think it's easier for them with writers.
Yeah. Yep.
My next question, I hope that, oops, you went on hold, hold on. I hope that answered your question.
Oh, yeah, it was great. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for calling. My next question is, it's about the events. Most of us, except for, I think, Justin. No, Drew, did you go to a Comic-Con?
No, this is my first.
Okay, so Justin, you're the only veteran. Are you guys looking
forward
to the
other... You can see it in my thousand-yard stare.
Is everybody looking forward to going to the other events? I know I am.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Hello?
It's a good time every year.
Yeah. Now, you'll tell us how it works later, right? Does the pass we get allow us to go other days or that day?
Yeah.
All
the
days.
You're going to be able to go
so we
all 4 days.
Oh, great. So we can take, you know, get out as much as we can?
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Yeah, you're going to have
sure
a lot
the,
of fun.
Make sure you hit the small press section. That's my favorite part of the show every year. It's a lot of great stuff in there.
Justin, aren't you there?
I think it's cool. The programs are so diverse. I mean, they really are, if you look at the program schedule. There's all kinds of things.
I got to tell you, I want to see Buzz Aldrin.
Yeah, me
I
too.
I'm really excited to see an astronaut. Anybody else have anything that they're looking forward to seeing? Did anybody look at the program yet?
I haven't, but I'm going to meet Mystery Creative. I'm going to say his name out loud right now. On Twitter, there's a lot of mystery Hollywood people, mm-hmm. from Mystery Brit Exec to Mystery Grip to Mystery Creative to Mystery Directrix to, you know, Mystery Executive, Mystery VP, TV Writers Assistant. They just go on, and they're really legitimate people in our business, and they use that platform to really say their truth without, you know, repercussions or fear of losing their job. And I find it so... fascinating and invigorating, and I follow all of them because they're getting the real word out there. So I always tell everyone to follow them. And he's going to be there with his Mystery Creative cards and drop them everywhere. So I'm going to try.
Cool.
So it's like I want to put a tracking beacon on him and find out who they are. And that's exciting to me. Strange thing, but.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. And your daughter, is she looking forward to it?
Yes, she's coming with me, and now I'm starting to regret it because I wonder, you know, if it limits my drinking time and my dancing at 3 a.m. with stormtroopers if I have a 7-year-old with me. But she's very excited. She doesn't quite understand what it is. Like, she thinks it's comic books, and we recently met Gail Simone on Twitter. I've never met her in real life, but we've interacted and we have lots of fun with each other. We went and got all the Gail Simone comic books, and my daughter's now read them all, so she thinks she's a hero. And she somehow thinks it's Gail's house, that we're going to Gail Simone's house for comics.
Oh, no.
And I've had to try to explain, and I don't think it'll ever work until she actually walks in. Will she fully grasp what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Aww, that's so sweet. But there's a lot of comic books, and there's stuff for her. There's the... Transformer, the children's Transformer one, and there's Archie's, and there's a lot of kids' comics that are going to be there, because I was just looking at the program before to get myself oriented.
Yeah, there's a whole kids section of programs in the when you go on, Catherine, on the website, there's a whole thing just for kids.
Just children.
Okay.
It's actually a little click. You just click on kids, and it's all children's. I mean, I know you're not going to spend the whole time doing that.
I know. I have to figure. I have to think how to do this so that I can have big girl time. Well, mommy time is different than big girl time. Just pretty clear on that.
Anybody else looking forward to any specific event?
I might be doing some nerdy teaching stuff.
Yeah, for me, it's seeing Rick Geary every year. I'm a giant Rick Geary fanboy, and so every year I get the new comics, and I can't wait.
Me, I'm just looking forward to meeting all kinds of people. To me, that's like one of the best parts of doing anything like this is you just meet so many different kinds of people. You know, whatever events you go to or wherever you walk, you end up talking to people, and you just expand your circle, and I just think it's cool. So that's what I'm looking forward to the most.
Melissa, send us good vibes that we have.
I absolutely will. I absolutely will. I'm really sorry that I'm not going to be able to make it out there. I've never been to San Diego Comic-Con, so I was really looking forward to it.
We were looking forward to
have your hotel room. Can I have your hotel room? Send me that reservation.
Catherine, I was actually going to stay in Long Beach on McQueen Mary and just drive in. So.
Oh, I've heard not to drive. Everyone told me to take a train, and I've had lots of great advice. But I am going to drive Wednesday and stay at a hotel Wednesday night. But then I was going to leave Thursday. Now that I can stay longer, I'm trying to figure out how to get how to stay. But
I was going to go and do some of the Comic-Con, but I also was going to visit some friends out there and also go over to Catalina Island and do some diving. So,
I love Catalina. That's where I learned to dive. That's cool. We're running out of time. I just want to know, other than Comic-Con, does anybody have anything that they'd like the audience to know about, any events? Catherine, do you have a movie? Anything you want anybody to know about?
Do you want to run through us?
Chirp, chirp. Yeah, I'll run through you. Catherine, do you have a movie or anything?
I don't like to really talk about my career that way. I really don't. I mean, it'll take care of itself. But I always like to remind people just to be your best self. Be the best you. If everyone would just sort of step up their game, I think we're at a time in the world where we're getting a little too dark and too scary. So all the bright lights just shine a little brighter.
I agree with that very much so. That's what I'm trying to focus myself. Nancy?
No, me? My big thing up, which I will say, is my play, Spin. It's the first play I've written in many years, and it's going to be on your Playhouse. And I am excited about it because it's really cool. It's just something I've always wanted to write this play, and I'm actually getting to direct it. And for me, it's just I just love doing it. It's just so much fun. So I hope people will listen
because
it's just fun.
It's really good because I've listened to it.
Well, I don't know about that, but it's just the experience for me, you know, like Catherine saying, you know, be your better self. And for me, part of that, too, is doing what you really love to do and doing it with people you love. And I just think it's cool. So.
Yay. Justin?
Oh, I have my first sequel just came out, Get Blank, the sequel to Mr. Blank. And, I'll be a scare away, you know, to get the whole scary part. What was it? We're supposed to be happy. Well, I'm going to be scary.
You're not scary, Justin.
No,
unless
I'm not.
If you wear a costume, then you're scary.
I've got to step up my game.
Drew, do you have any seminars or any events that you'd like to tell the audience about?
Well, I'll be in San Diego for Conjecture October 10th and 12th, and I'll be signing for the third book of my Clockwork Heart steampunk trilogy. So
yay!
Maybe if anyone's there.
I was going to say that. No, I love your steampunk stuff, and it's really cool. And Conjecture is a local convention that's here, and I'm going to be there too. Melissa, do you have anything that you're going to? I mean, I knew you were going to come to Comic-Con, but is there anything else?
You guys have so much cooler conventions. We never have any conventions here in South Florida. That's just really,
really?
Very depressing sometimes. We really don't. I mean, yes, we have, you know, like bikini conventions and stuff like that, but we don't actually have, there's nothing in the way of Star Trek fantasy or anything like that down here. The closest,
not even like Star Trek bikini conventions?
Yeah, you know,
Star Trek,
you know,
bikini,
I really
bikini.
I don't really want to think about Star Trek bikinis, thanks. Yeah. So for me, I've got a couple more books coming out, and I'm going to try to get out to the Xena convention for the what is supposed to be the final one this year. And just real busy at work.
Sadly, we are now at the end of the show. I want to thank you all. Thank you so much for both being on my show and being part of my panel. I don't know if I can express my gratitude. I'm actually speechless. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll see you soon.
All right. See you next week.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for chatting with Sherry. Thank you. Thank you.